This is CKCU Literary News, bringing you the latest on literatures in Europe today. Here's your host, Hans-George Ruprecht.
Once again, with CKCU Literary News senior correspondent Friederike Knabe.
Hello, Friederike. How are you doing today?
Hello, Hans. It's nice to have you back in Ottawa. How was Leipzig?
Well, I tell you, it was, of course, springtime. And coming back a few days ago, it was quite a surprise. But look, let's talk about the Leipzig Book Fair.
Yes, exactly. I'm so curious to hear what all the events and what you heard and saw.
Because we had already an earlier talk about the various prizes. And I must say, this 2014 fair in Leipzig was absolutely remarkable and very special.
Why?
First of all, the book fair is being accompanied every year by the literature festival named Leipzig Reads. Okay? Like Canada Reads.
But bigger, I understand.
Well, you will be amazed. During the weeks before and a few days after the Leipzig Book Fair, 3,200 events in 410 reading locations with 3,000 authors took
place. 3,000
authors, yes.
And they're not all German-speaking authors.
No, from 42 countries, you see.
So that is amazing.
That's absolutely amazing, yes. And it is, of course, staged in such a way that you feel really welcome in Johann Sebastian Bach's town. There is not one cafe, not one bookstore, and not one church basement where you wouldn't find an author. But let's say there were 2,180 exhibitors from all over Europe with their books, bookstands, and so forth. In Leipzig, which is now called by insiders Little Berlin, Klein Berlin, because it's an amazing place, very nicely restored. You can walk there. And I must say, I felt welcome because with my press pass, I had free public transport.
Nice.
All over the city and from center town to the huge kind of campus of the International Book Fair there. Now, what was in the center of that thing? What was the centerpiece of that book fair there? I think certainly the appearance Switzerland, Auftritt Schweiz, was the highlight there. Okay, among a few other things I will talk about. Appearance Switzerland presented about 80 writers being there during these days of the book fair, a little bit earlier as well.
80? From Switzerland.
From Switzerland, yeah. Actually, from the three different cultural, not four cultural communities there. Entirely funded. It makes us dream here, of course, in this part of the world, by Pro Helvetia, Präsenz Schweiz, entirely supported the travel and the staging of this event, focusing on, of course, contemporary writings in Switzerland. Just to mention a few, Melinda Nertsch, Abonji, Lukas Beerfuß, Peter Stamm.
Peter Stamm, of course, we know quite well because he's been winning awards right, left and center, and he's very well translated into English.
Yes, I know. There was also Ralph Dulti, Catalin Dorian Florescu, then the very distinguished historian and essayist Adolf Muschke, then Michael Schliskin, Milena Moser, and obviously Martin Suter. But there were most remarkable kind of things happening.
So would you say it's more like a European book fair now or not a German speaking book fair?
Definitely. Precisely this year. Look, there was a series of presentations and activities organized by, it's a funny name, by Transit Kilometer, or the way it ought to be pronounced, Transit Kilometer 2014, T-R-N-S-Y-T.
Mm-hmm.
It is a series of events supported by, or let's say, presenting and supported by writers, translators, and publishers from Poland, the Ukraine, and Belarus.
Oh, very, very politically astute.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, I should say, in addition to what I just said about Switzerland, the second highlight focus was on Southern Eastern Europe and what we call Middle Europa, Eastern Europe, with events, of course, now in many ways inspired by or taking issue with what we know is happening now in Ukraine.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think that the star author of this series of conversations and platforms and dealing with Central Eastern Europe was undoubtedly Yuri Andruchovich, the distinguished Ukrainian writer who published an open letter, which has been translated into many, many languages. I read him also in France. Le Monde published this entire letter. So in this open kind of statement to his friends and journalists and publishers and editors, Yuri Andruchovich concluded, and this was, of course, immediately after the dreadful events in Kiev, a quote from this letter, "In Ukraine, full-scale crimes against humanity are now being committed, and it is the present government that is responsible for them." Now, he was interviewed and constantly invited to talk shows, and the focus was indeed on what's happening now, you know.
Do you think there is a trend that the writers from that region become more politicized?
I would say so. I would say so. I got that impression while I was listening to, I think I would pronounce him, Arthur Klino. From Belarus. He was telling us that things are changing drastically in that part of the world, and we are engaged in a process of, call it a civic kind of revolution, or in any case, a process which will prepare us for the things to come, hopefully for the better, see?
Right.
So this is certainly part of the entire picture. But of course, many authors are wondering, see, will they ever get a chance, you know, to become that kind of mainstream and being in the position that they could just talk equally free as we in the West can do. So there is still this awareness of a different world, see, which is, of course, a heritage of the Soviet era. See.
Yes, and it's still going on, obviously. So,
mm-hmm. But let me say, a large topic, as I said earlier, was indeed the discussion about the beginning and the consequences of World War One. You could also see this at the French Salon du Livre in Paris. Big event there.
We'll
as well.
Talk about the Salon du Livre another time. Because
we must. It was totally different atmosphere. But I'm just foreshadowing. And we will have here in Ottawa certainly occasions to discuss, I think, the relationships between the historical, military, political dimension of World War One and culture. and literature. Mm-hmm. And this was precisely a topic I found most revealing and most stimulating, and coming from here, totally disconnected in many ways, entirely new, namely a discussion by Polish and Ukrainian and Russian historians dealing with, call it the aftermath, or dealing with the ways the beginning of World War One influenced and changed contemporary literature from Central, Eastern, and Southeastern Europe. What are the traces still today in this part of the world as far as the literary creative process goes? And it's surprising to notice that there is a different perspective, of course, you know, than the one we will certainly discover the more we look into our Canadian response and memories and commemorations of the sacrifice Canadians made during that war. Now, I should mention, because I hope that we will hear about these authors and historians again. So I had the chance to listen to Yaroslav Rytsak from Ukraine, then to Robert Truba from Poland, and to Vladimir Lachuki from Belarus, precisely talking about that, see, about culture, literature, and the beginning and the end of World War One. I should mention that also from German authors and historians, we now have, in case there were discussions, of course, many critics and historians were taking part in roundtable discussions, but there was one, I think, which really made me think about what one should not forget when we deal here with World War One, namely a new book, close to, I think, 600 pages or so, by Ernst Pieper, published by Populain, editor in Berlin, under the title, of course, in German, Night Over Europe, Nacht Über Europa. Okay? Now, what is he presenting in opposition to, say, Christopher Clark's The Sleepwalkers, you know? He is giving us a perspective of, the subtitle is The Cultural History, the Literature and Artistic Response to That What Caused the End of the Old Europe.
That is rather a new approach, isn't
absolutely
it?
New, very well documented, with all kinds of excerpts from novels and poetry and paintings and so forth. And this dimension, I think, should not be forgotten. See, we will hear, rightly so, a lot about, as I said earlier, see, our most important contribution here as Canadians to that commemoration and celebration of human sacrifice during that war. But there is also this other dimension, namely, to what extent artists have translated this and created out of this experience major literary and cultural works of
and it probably goes back even before the beginning, so because yes. We still have these questions about why did it happen and what triggered it, that we may know, but we don't know the real causes that came together, and maybe the causes also were much broader in the society at the time, yes. And not just in the military leaders and the royalties and others.
Yes, Frederica, I can tell you, I saw in Paris at La Bibliothèque Nationale, François Mitterrand, this new huge national library, currently an exhibition just entitled Été 1914, mm-hmm. The End of the Old World. And there you don't hear that much, you don't see that much about the fight in the trenches. This will be probably another exhibition. It is about how Europe was sliding into that and how mentalities and ideologies, you know, were just naturally responding to this event which triggered it. People were ready. People were ready.
Yeah.
And it's. I mean, I can only say as so. It's mind-boggling. See, this overstated feel of national identity, you know, chauvinism. So this is amazing kind of our point of view, you know, quite impressive and overwhelming willingness to die for the fatherland.
Yes. You know? Yeah. I'm wondering, because in Germany we have that same theme coming up now, looking into those types of societal roots. And I wonder whether it really needs that distance from the events to be able to ask questions about it in that way, because when one is too close to it, then one doesn't ask those, or one thinks one knows the answers. But to take a fresh look at what the societies really got into at the time, and how this whole emotional überstructure developed,
yes,
maybe something we can only today now discuss.
Yeah.
But this one's absolutely fascinating, Hans, what you've been listening to and hearing to. But I was wondering to one thing, get a bit on a lighter note before we finish.
Oh, yes. lighter note.
On a lighter note. But then before that, I wanted to ask you what, amongst the many, many things you saw and heard in Leipzig, if you want to pick out one thing that you particularly enjoyed and wanted to share with us.
Friederike, you know, the lighter note, it was just amazing. It's a tradition at the Leipzig Book Fair to have parallel to, well, to the literary events there, or in order to lighten up the bookish world of the book fair, there is the annual festival of the manga comics.
The Japanese manga?
Yes,
oh.
The manga. Now, I tell you, if you are a teenager and have the right costume and the right makeup and the right dress to look like a hero from a graphic novel or from a digital game or from cartoons, of course, from animation movies, from Digimon adventures, from Pokemon characters, if you are a Transformer or if you want to be a Frankenstein and a Hulk, you are welcome at the Leipzig Book Fair. So when people are looking at new books, suddenly somebody stands behind, and they must behave. So they are not allowed to interfere. They're not supposed to talk, ask. They're just there. They walk like ghosts, you know? And it's so
funny. Hilarious.
It's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And they have a special room where you can see, by the way, this is fascinating, platforms and discussions and so forth, and you know, impromptu kind of little.
They can speak in their own room.
In their own room, not doing this.
Right.
And you can buy the latest, most sophisticated nowadays, of course, most programs digitally developed accessories. You see?
Yeah.
So
apps for everything.
Apps for everything. So this sheds a very light note on the on this bookish world, and it's very entertaining. See, and but you're not supposed. Well, they are not supposed to engage you. See, you can smile at them, and they, if you ask them a question, you just smile back. You know, it's really funny. But to come back to your question, a personal event, you know, I had many events. So personal encounters, and I did, I think, about 4 interviews, which we will air sooner or later. But for me, the most stimulating and, I should rather say, moving encounter was with the new publisher, of Klaus Wagenbach, Verlag in Berlin. This means a lot to lovers of German literature who remember the 60s in Berlin. Klaus Wagenbach is celebrating this year the 50th anniversary.
Of the publishing house.
Wow. Of the publishing house.
Independent forever publishing house.
Absolutely. And you
makes
remember...
It makes you nostalgic. Me too.
But you were a student in those days in Berlin. Tell me more about how these books looked and what you discovered in these books.
Yeah, we just had to get all the latest books. They were very simple. They were paperbacks. Right. They were black with a white band, yes, and just the title in the white band in black. And but we knew that they were modern authors. They were thinkers. There were a whole wide range of provocative writers.
Well, let's say leftist.
Leftist, yeah, with a leftist bent. And we just absorbed them. And it was just opening up a whole new intellectual world for us. Because we could discuss them. They were affordable. So we could carry them around with us. And it was just an incredible treat. And I've still got quite a few of them in my library.
Yes, so do I. So Klaus Wagenbach was the avant-garde publishing house of the 60s, and they're celebrating the 50th anniversary. And I must say, it was really moving to hear from the current publisher. They are opening up to world-class international authors, and we here in Canada can celebrate that Riyad Ahsani Razaki's book Iman has been published by Klaus Wagenbach. And
he's born in Benin and came with his mother to Quebec, and he lives in Quebec, and we should really try to get him onto a
we
program.
We will.
His book in Iman also is published under the same title in English, and so we can actually do a very nice maybe even interview with him.
Yes, we should. Riyad Ahsani Razaki is now on a European tour. He is the star of the Klaus Wagenbach Verlag. It's wonderful. But they are also publishing authors from Italy and other parts of the world.
And some of it not only in German, in translation, in translation. Also in English and Italian. And,
absolutely.
So they're becoming a European or international publisher.
So that's about Leipzig, Friederike, and I think we will have another show on Paris.
Oh, yes, I really want to hear the stories from Paris as well.
I have so
and
many.
There is more to be said about Leipzig, too, but we can't do everything at the same time.
Well, I should say I had a very nice encounter with one of our correspondents, Dr. Clemens Klemme.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yes, in Auerbach's Keller.
Auerbach's Keller, famous
restaurant in Leipzig.
Yes,
thank you, Friederike.
Oh, thank you, Hans. It's great. It's really interesting. Yeah, so, thank you so much.
Bye for now.
That was CKCU Literary News, a regular program about literatures in Europe today, brought to you by CKCU FM 93.1. the community-based campus radio of Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada. We can be heard worldwide. Simply go to http://carleton.ca/litnews/ for streaming and podcast. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter under CKCU Lit News in one word. Thanks for listening.